I am actually stepping in for Pam tonight because she's not feeling well, and I'm co-hosting with her guest co-host, Michael. And tonight, we welcome award-winning actress, author, writer, producer, comedian, Rain Pryor. Hi, Rain.
Hello!
How are you tonight?
I'm good. The day is almost over. I'm great.
That is great. Yes, it is almost
Today is a
over.
long day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
it's like,
I'm. Go ahead.
sorry, go ahead. No, please.
I was just going to say, I am so thrilled to have you on the show with us. And I know Pam is really sad that she didn't get to be here with us, but she is here behind the curtains,
Yay.
as you could say, like Oz. So she is here in spirit. So I have been hearing a lot about this wonderful play of yours, and it actually is making my mouth water, just the title of it. Fried chicken and latkes, they do sound like they go really well together.
So, yeah, right? Hello, potato pancake and some chicken. You can't go wrong.
Exactly. Tell us again, what are latkes for those that don't know? I actually do know what they are, but there's a lot that
Potato
don't.
pancake. It's a potato
Yes.
pancake. The
They're
Jews
delicious.
just call them latkes.
Yeah. Very good stuff. So I know that one of the songs you sang during your rehearsal was His Eyes Are on the Sparrow. Does
Yes.
this song have a significant meaning for you? And you do have a beautiful voice.
Thank you. No, it doesn't. I just what it has for me is the character, which is funny because in the rehearsal you see the character that actually sings the song, but the character who sings the song, I'm an English lady, and so for me it has significance in that. I think it represents so many of the Baptist kind of churches. The whole congregation sings along, and it has that feel to it. And so, for the sequence of and the place that it is within the show, I think it was the song to me that would fit very well, and be able to kind of tell what it is that I want to say. And that's kind of why I picked it, but not because it had any significance in my life other than watching Sister Act 2, I think it was.
A
great
underrated film.
movie.
Very underrated film.
Right?
Yes, very good movie.
Lauren
So
Hill
did
was
you think
fantastic. Oh, no, maybe that was Sister Act. No. So many.
Yeah. Now, did you take singing lessons or did it come naturally?
I actually studied opera
Oh,
when I was
wow.
13, because that was the route, more classical, sort of was the route that I was going in. And then I think in the era that I grew up in, which sort of fits also my show, that there weren't a lot of, we didn't have a lot of black or people of color singing opera, and sort of the pop route is the area in which you went into, or the R&B route. And I don't sing R&B necessarily, so the pop route and the pop rock route is kind of what opened itself up to me and appealed to me. And plus, I used to play piano at that age, so definitely the pop and the more singer-songwriter feel is the area that I ended up venturing into. But I think the study of opera kind of opened me up to be able to sing almost any kind of music, because of the range in which you sing in and the notes that you have to follow and the languages, and it kind of opens you up kind of culturally to music.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That is
Yeah.
fantastic. I didn't realize that. That is wonderful. You
Yeah.
definitely do have a really beautiful singing voice. Very
Well,
talented.
thank you.
What is it with your play that you want your audience to take away from your show?
A change of perception. And maybe how they think about race and think about the world in which they live in and how they want to make it different. It's a lot. I talk about growing up being black and Jewish, in the late 60s and the part of the 70s and the 80s, and I just want them to walk away with a sense of, yeah, we still have an issue of race in this country that we have to deal with. You know, and I think now the show is more prevalent than when I first started it 10 years ago, for the fact that we have a black president and race is kind of on the surface. It's something that we're having to face. Like, no one wants to say the N-word, but yet we find every other way to call our president the N-word. So the show kind of, you know, confronts issues and makes us kind of take a look at ourselves and our place within those issues, whether you're black or, you know, Jewish or white or whatever you are. I think people, it's definitely in this world now, we have so many mixed races of people.
Yeah.
And I think you kind of walk away with, you know, a sense of, do I think that way? Do I need to change it? How can I be a force to change something? And then also the fact that everyone has a story, you know, to tell.
I think that's really unique, Rain. You actually are able to connect generations together with what you're doing as well, because you hit on common themes with racism, or, you know, what they'd be religious differences, not that being Jewish or non-Jewish is a difference, but for some people
right.
it is. I think it's really interesting, because I think a lot of work today, and whenever, however long art has existed, it's been very relevant for its time, but there aren't a lot of pieces that are relevant for multiple time periods, especially when things have happened prior. So you really open up society to sort of reach out to not just itself in terms of generations reaching out to one another, but actually multiple generations reaching out.
Absolutely.
Is that an intended purpose or sort of a byproduct of the process?
I think it was a byproduct. I mean, you know, to tell you the truth, when I first wrote the show, I thought I wrote a drama. I thought my life was just really dramatic in the way that I grew up, and, you know, my dad is and whatever, and it turned out it was a comedy. And that kind of hit on some issues. And then over the years, and I think because of the change in climate political and racially, I was able then to tap a little deeper into those aspects of my life, as well as bring my dad into it. So what's interesting, when you say generation, the first thing I thought of are the people who grew up on my dad and listening to his stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're brought back to who that man was during the 70s. And then the new audience that might not be aware of who Richard Pryor was is introduced to Richard Pryor. You know, and so that's interesting, and what some of his views were and what I saw growing up, which ends up not being the celebrity child per se, but more of, you know, at times the absentee father and the father who then tried to be a dad at moments. Because I do, you know, my dad, you know, I got in trouble for trying to sneak out of the house. So I do this whole segment on that in my show, and it's just funny that people relate to him as a parent, you know. So
it sort of shows that
different
side of him.
Yeah, absolutely. So you relate to the growing up with, you know, these crazy, everyone thinks their family's crazy, everyone,
right.
You know, even the, like, the normal guy, he'll say, I grew up with a great, you know, like a friend of ours the other night was like, I grew up in a great family, my parents were great, but yet it's great because I live, you know, 6,000 miles away from them. So everyone has it.
No, and I think what you say is really correct, because I can tell you that I was listening to your father, and I'm 33, so I was in middle school listening to your father, and
wow.
You know, for a young white kid in suburbia listening to Richard Pryor, it could definitely set some people, you know, looking at me a little bit funny, and it was great because, and I realize it more now listening to him, is I don't know if it was as funny as if it was just so honest and insightful that people
right.
didn't think anybody would be that honest. And
right.
It is a young person, and I'm curious, just you grew up in it. I mean, that's empowering in a lot of ways, because I think
you know,
in society, you have so many people saying you can't, or this is
right.
the way it is, this system exists this way, and he stands out as such an example of not being a part of the system but still being very successful.
And what's really funny about what you're saying is I feel that the world of stand-up has gotten so politically correct that we're afraid to talk about things and kind of those truths. We keep on the safe path. you know, like political humor kind of has its place and it's political, but it never kind of goes to the real edge of what that era of comedians had talked about. You know, there's no one that's really talking about what Carlin talked about or talking about what my dad talked about. And, you know, I find for myself, because I do stand up as well, you know, I am the storyteller and I am bringing my truth to it. And I have friends who are around me who are also, you know, taking that leap of faith to kind of bring that generation of comedy stand up back, you know, to say that I have something that needs to be said, and I'm not afraid to go to that edge and bring you back, you know, because
right.
That's what made us laugh when we were late. It's like people in a 12-step meeting, you know, you talk about your tragedy and your pain, and you have a group of alcoholics going, that was hilarious when you crashed your car and wrapped it around a pole. I remember that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's what it's about.
Yeah,
you know.
Definitely. Oh, man. So do you actually feel like you've become stronger and understand more about your life by doing this show, or is it a day-to-day issue that you still have to deal with?
You know, I think where I'm strong is knowing exactly pretty much who I am. You know, I
mm-hmm.
think, in you know, over the last 10 years, I mean, I've grown up. I'm 43 years old now. So, you know, if I started when I was 33, you know, here I am at 43 and life has changed and it's different and I'm more of who I am
mm-hmm.
now, you know.
Right.
And so the story I'm telling, you know, I think I have less of an attachment to it and more it's become an evolution, and I need to just keep telling the story because these are the issues that we need to kind of go to the edge and bring it back again.
Right, right. That is
right
fantastic
now.
What you're doing with your show. So where do you go inside to bring out these characters, all your characters in their show?
My multi-personalities? you know, I'm a people watcher. I really
mm-hmm.
love watching people, you know, I love going to the parks and walking down the street and eating outside or staring out of windows and studying behavior. You know, I think that's why I wanted to be a psychologist at one time and really thought about it. And I did. I actually became a counselor for many, many years. And I don't mean camp counselor. So,
there's anything wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with camp counselor.
Right.
And, you know, the study, though, of human behavior. And so I think acting is just, you know, it's truth. It's bringing those people to life. And when you're a person that can show empathy and you can have feeling, then you really know how to take these characters and bring them to
life. Rain?
Yeah. Hello?
Oh, sorry.
Did I lose you?
Got dropped.
Uh-oh.
I didn't hear you for a minute. I can hear you now.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I thought you'd gotten cut off. Blog Talk has that reputation, you know.
Right.
Technology, you know.
Yeah,
so,
I do.
You span through decades in your show. Do you have people of all ages in your audience?
All ages above 18, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a lot of language in my show that I would deem unsuitable for youngsters.
Okay.
Although they listen to it, you know, in school, but your parents
right.
aren't supposed to know that.
Right.
But you also have a reason for why you would incorporate it in your show as well. It's probably also a part of that process of why the show is so impactful as well.
It is, and it's also, it's not, you know, I don't just use words for the sake of using them because I have
right.
nothing else to say. I mean, it is a generation, and I am talking about my family, and that is the way that some of them spoke, you know. So the language definitely is more about the punctuation, which was also part of what my dad's stand-up was about. It wasn't, you know, he didn't use profanity in the sense of, like, you hear it now. I mean, it was
right.
punctuation, and it was poetry in motion.
So well
mm-hmm.
put. That's well put, because I think so. I mean, whether it's acting or music or anything, I think you can sell a quality of something if people want to hear it. But to actually
right.
make it impactful, that's an art. That's actually
right.
a skill. And it's really cool to hear you, because and the New York Times review and everything is great because it says, you know, all of these wonderful things and all the different things that are going on with the show, and each one is so authentic. And I think that for that time period, the causes and the passion and the importance of everything that was going on was articulated and was specific and it wasn't politically correct. And for you to bring that out in today's society of hush hush, you know, we want to talk about the president, but we're going to pretend not to talk about the president. You know, I think it's healthy, and you're working with young people, and you're doing a lot of different things. So it's great that you're able to
It's funny that you just say young people, because I just finished with Baltimore Theater Works this morning. My morning started off with me going to see a production that we put together for middle school and elementary school kids. And they were actually performed in front of their peers today, and it was amazing. And then I left there, and I worked improvisation with foster kids. And And afterwards, I asked them, I said, did you get anything out of this? Like, how did you feel? And they said, you know, this one girl goes, this is something I can take back and do with my brothers and sisters. And this is, you know, and one girl goes, I'm really, really shy. And she is really shy. Like, she didn't talk at all. And then, but she participated, and she goes, I kind of feel like I'm shy, but if I did this, maybe I wouldn't be as shy. It would help me be social. And that's what it's about. Like, theater and the arts is very impactful for our young people, and so that's why I created Baltimore Theater Works, for just that mission, you know, because I know it can change lives.
Right. That is fantastic. I love hearing that. So what, after the people see your show, what kind of reactions do you get from them?
You know, I've gotten every kind of reaction. You know, I've gotten people walking up to me with tears in their eyes and thanking me for the story that I'm telling. I've gotten people who are mixed who are, again, thank you for the story I'm telling. I've gotten people saying, so I still don't get it. Are you black or you're Jewish? I've gotten other people going, I liked it, but I don't know. And I've gotten other people who are like, oh, my God, this should be on Broadway. I've gotten it all. You know, it runs the gamut. And so, you know, but that's the thing about the artist. You know, not everyone loved Shakespeare when he first started writing. If, you know, according to the other play, did he actually write them? But that's a whole nother thing, you know. You know, not everyone, you know, dug the thee, thou, the.
Right.
What is he talking about?
Who's this lady?
You know, who's Juliet? Why does she want Romeo so bad? Move on.
Plenty of fish in the sea.
Exactly. Mercutio, he's much better.
He's got a portfolio.
Right. He's got a 401k.
You win.
I know I would love to see this play, and, of course, I'm not close enough to New York at the moment, but I have Jewish family. I'm not Jewish myself, but I've been around plenty of Jewish festivities and different things. So I'm like, now I'm dying to see this play, this show.
And what's funny is I've heard that too, like people who are of the Jewish descent come to the show, and they go, oh, it wasn't Jewish enough. Very Jewish of you. You know, so I have to give you more of the stuff, you know, more shtick or whatever it is I have to give you. You know, and I'm like, but that's my story. Like, I'm not telling your story. You know, this is not, you know, Henny Youngman or whatever.
Exactly. When you and your show were awarded the NAACP Award for Best Female Performer Equity in 2005, what did that award mean to you?
You know, what it meant is I felt like I was, for me, it honestly felt like I was accepted by a community that during that time and era did not even notice me. Because of, you know, the post-slave mentality, it's like people with light skin were, you know, I'm supposed to be privileged. I'm supposed to have what I want. But they don't realize, like, in that privilege, I also don't have the stereotypical white girl features. I'm not the light-skinned girls that make it famous because they look like pretty, beautiful white girls, like, you know, the Halle Berrys and the Lisa Bonets and all that. I'm me. I'm unique. I'm different. And so I finally felt with that, it was like, wow, you see me as me now. I don't have to be those
girls. Wow.
And that's kind of what it meant to me on a deeper level. You know, it's like I also don't have to be the kind of black girl that walks around in daishiki and my hair all braided and twisted up either. Like, I can be who I am with, you know, I have to thank Macy Gray, because if it wasn't for her big hair, my hair would still be out of fashion.
So
and she brought the big girl hair back.
Yes, she sure did. That is fantastic.
If Erykah Badu could have just let it out a little bit more.
Exactly, just let it out, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Recently, the show was chosen to be at the Celebrity Solo Performance for the National Black Theater Festival in North Carolina.
Yes.
And I'm hoping I have the dates right, July 29th through August 3rd.
Yes, that's it.
For people to... Oh, see, that's kind of close. I could drive there, theoretically.
Okay, then you're driving. Look, just to the fact that you said I could kind of, theoretically, just, you know.
Well, I'm in Georgia. I'm in Atlanta, so I could go. But I was also going to go into one other thing. After I've got to mention that you can buy tickets to see her off-Broadway show at the Actors Temple Theater by going to rainpryor.com. You've got to scroll down the homepage to the link in info and click on the tour dates / appearances to see where else the show is going to be and speaking engagements as well.
Or friedchickenandlockas.com. It has the link.
Exactly.
Or telecharge.com, off-Broadway, fried chicken and latkes, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm from D.C., so I'm coming to New York to see it. So.
Right? You better, Mike.
I will. I will.
Better.
You're awesome. Your energy is fantastic. I have to see this on stage.
You.
I do.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So
I'm gonna bring crazy people with me, little hoot and holler,
yes,
and have a great time.
That's the whole object. That's what's another thing. Like, you get different audiences. I get the audiences that I think sometimes I suck because I don't hear a peep. And then at the end of the show, I'll get a standing ovation, and I literally freak out. Like, I want to say, why didn't you laugh? Like, why didn't you fucking...
Where were you all night?
Where were you all night? You know, and then I realized, because there are different types of audiences. You know, there's the type that goes, should I be laughing at this? Should I not? Should no one... All right, should I just sit here? And she's talking to us and asking us to participate. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe that's... breaking the fourth wall. Who breaks the fourth wall? You know, yeah, exactly. I'm like, I do, people.
Down with it. But
down
with
the wall.
But what isn't that what it's all about though, Rain? Is just getting, like, just making that interaction a real interaction rather than just you pay the money, you come and see me perform and do what I do. I make the money that you pay, and then we go our separate ways. I mean, isn't there a bigger engagement that you're bringing with that approach? I mean, and however they feel. I mean, what's that like for you? We've talked a lot about the audience, but what do you gain from each performance when you walk away?
You know what? I love it. I'm addicted. I'm addicted. I love live theater. I love the energy. It's like I afterwards, and then I crash. You know, I'm also exhausted afterwards. You know, it's, I wish I could do it more just because of the weight loss.
Honesty on top of honesty. That's beautiful.
I'm not joking. There's a lot of pounds that can be lost and calories burned up from an hour on the stage running around.
Well, no, if people realize that singing is one of the best ab workouts you can get.
I guess so.
It
I
is. It really is. I mean, the way you
have to
push your diet.
What?
We'll get into the metaphysics of it later.
Right, exactly. It's a mental diet.
We'll just absorb it.
Hilarious.
Rain, what are you hoping to do with Baltimore Theater Works? I'm, like I said, I'm in D.C. and I've heard a lot about it. Suzanne Pinedo has told me a ton and you know, showed me so much about what you're doing. I actually was supposed to go to your opening last week, and
my dad's
broke his back, so I've got to he's got to do some things down here. But I really, I just because music and art and community and all that stuff is really important to what I'm doing and the things that I'm trying to represent. What are you hoping to really gain with the youth community in Baltimore?
What I'm really hoping to gain is part of what I experienced today, which is there's a change in these kids that opens them up to the skills necessary to really succeed in life. You know, and I feel that through theater arts, you develop, one, the sense of community, because it takes a village to put on a whole entire show. And it takes a village to communicate with one another and get things done, problem solving. You know, you're learning about history and culture. So it really incorporates. You learn about science. You're learning technical and technology. And so I think that, you know, and if you're a musician, you're learning mathematics. Mm-hmm. And rhythm and where that plays. And I just think all of it really enhances what they can do in school and gives a sense of confidence that, you know, sitting in a classroom just looking at a textbook and regurgitating information doesn't give you. And so for me, and especially working with inner city kids, when they see themselves, when these little kids are doing Willy Wonka Jr. and they're all black kids and the audience is 98% black students looking at themselves up on the stage performing in the play, you know, there's nothing that beats that in the world. You can't, it's almost like if Obama came to the school and stood in front of them in person and said, yes, I am the president, and this is how I did it. It sparks that thing that says, I really can do it. It's not out of my reach.
And that makes a lot of sense, Rain, because you'd mentioned earlier that you were really into psychology. I have a background in education, and it sounds like you realize, and I'm sure that you've known this for a long time, that children can learn different ways. They can use theater, music, art, dance, writing, any of those art forms to be able to communicate more effectively. At least with confidence, with how they present themselves. You mentioned it yourself, the girl that's shy can actually just go out there and say, okay, I can do this, and that's going to help her get over her shyness. This doesn't sound so much as you're building little actors, but you aren't empowering them. You're actually giving them the skills to empower themselves.
Let me tell you something. I'm not trying to build little actors. The last thing I want is for any of these kids really to think like, oh, they're going to make it.
Right.
You know, it's because it's really only a handful that makes it, and it takes a lot of determination, and it takes a skill set, and it takes an attitude, and it takes that it factor. It really does take that. And so what I am trying to do is exactly what you just said, is empower. This is about empowerment and the arts. You know, you go to Europe and it's full of culture and music and art and theater. You know, those people are great in business and they're great at communicating all over the world because they understand the different cultures and they, you know, and what's so funny is I think we don't realize that even, and I bring it back to Obama just for this reason, that the man is multicultural because of, do you know what I mean? And it's like, that's what you want in the world. You want us to be multicultural, multilingual, so that we can, you know, if we want to trade in different markets, if we believe in capitalism, you know, we can continue that.
Well, and we can communicate. We can start communicating the same ideas, just so we aren't trying to communicate a different perspective, but actually speak a similar language that isn't the words, but maybe the actions. That's a fantastic perspective, and I appreciate that you do create a global look at things, and you're looking at things a little bit deeper, and knowing that that's going to be a part of young kids, you know, progress and perspective. That's awesome, and I don't think a lot of teachers bring that, and that's fantastic to hear, Rain. That's beautiful, actually.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I have to agree. And I want to ask you, where were you when I was in school? I would have loved to have learned from you. And because I actually took an acting class, because I used to be shy, which I still can be. But I took this acting class thinking, well, maybe. But I knew when I took the class, there was no way. I'm not outgoing like that. And I knew that acting was not my forte and that I was not interested in even pursuing it. I'd like to do something kind of behind the scenes in that realm maybe, but not directing or anything like that. But, you know, so, but yeah. That was one of my questions. No, actually,
we brought up Europe, Rain. You did bring up Europe, and it's amazing because there was I was sitting down with Ben Folds actually for an interview, and he spoke about when he was in Ireland and England. Well, and he said people would just get up and start singing. You know, it'd be open mic, be karaoke, it'll be live concert. Doesn't matter where you're at, but those people would engage regardless of their voice, regardless of their talent. I mean, some people just get up on stage and start playing at some of these.
Nobody knew who I was when I went to go sing in the UK jazz music. I made an album there. Do you know what? My shows were sold out. Nobody knew who I was. They were always sold out because people wanted to go out and hear music.
Wow.
They're like, oh, we don't even know who you are, but that's just fantastic. We even bought your album. We went to your little, the little thing at the little shop, and we went and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whoa. Like, culture. And, you know, like, you set up a gig in New York to try to sing, and you're lucky if you get 10 people.
That's the greatest scene ever.
Right. You know? So there is. There's, like, a hunger for the arts there. And the open mics there are the bomb. Like, when Ben Folds was right, like, you go and the open mics are the most incredible experience, and they go on for hours, and it's a jam session, and then you're meeting new people, and you're creating new things, and it's just, you know, constant. And that's kind of how I felt about the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. When I went there for the first time and did my show, and I saw the difference in stand-up comedians that you don't see in the U.S. It was like, these are guys that are hanging out until 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're creating with each other, and they're saying, you know what, when you did that one bit in your act, you really should be doing this. And no one's saying, like, okay, now give me $5,000 for that joke.
Right.
They're helping each other because it's also sharpening their skills as writers and thinkers. And so it became this group that, like, you know, hung out, which was like Paul Pervenza and the Brendan Burns and Tim Minchin, who's now, you know, part of Matilda on Broadway and, you know, and famous. But these guys are always hanging out going, oh, I saw this, and what about this, and your act, and blah, 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 blah. And it's beautiful. It's the most awesome experience.
And we call that networking.
Right. You know.
That's the best type of networking, actually.
Right, exactly.
I'm actually curious if you always wanted to wear all four hats as an actress, writer, producer, director, or that did the actress come first, followed by the rest, or did you have other things kind of...
You know what? I just wanted to act and sing. I mean, that's really, and on stage, you know, do musicals. That's all I ever wanted to do. And then the directing thing kind of fell in my lap, literally, like, fell in my lap. Someone said, hey, will you direct a show? And I was like, okay. And then it just was one of those things that I ended up realizing I really love actors. And I love the art of truth-telling. And it's my responsibility as a director to help you find what that truth is.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I love it.
Yeah. You see, I can tell you love all of it. And it makes us engrossed in what you do just because of that.
Right on.
That's why I really want to see your show.
The total geeky dork just came out. I was like, golly, folks.
Well, Sabina and I are just going to fight over who's going to ask you the next question on Skype right now.
Yeah,
anyway,
really?
You just have such great energy. And you know what
thank
I mean? It's just,
you.
It's,
thanks.
It's fantastic. It is.
I'm actually, I've got to admit to this, I am a huge Head of the Class fan. And I wanted to know what it was like on that show, working with Howard Hessman, and that was one of my favorite shows growing up.
You know what? He was amazing to me. He really was really kind and nice to me, and he said, you just keep doing what you're doing, because he knew I walked into a situation that already existed with rumors that I was there to replace, and that wasn't the case, and he knew what I was up against. he knew what I was going to have to deal with, and he kind of took me off and said, this is what you're going to have to face, and keep doing what you're doing. You know, and so he was actually lovely, and I'll never forget that. And then Billy Connolly was the same way. He was just warm and loved what he was doing.
Oh, I love Billy Connolly. He is a hilarious, hilarious man.
He is.
Cracks me up. And, yeah, that was one of my favorite shows. So,
you know, look, anytime a Scottish man opens his mouth, you're going to laugh. You don't understand what the heck they're trying to say, right? You don't know what the heck the man's trying to say. And then, he makes talking about kids vomit funny. It's like, you know, he's just not die.
I've got to say, I have a talent for actually understanding different accents like that. I think it comes from the fact that my grandmother is from London. So this is the same. This is the woman who married my grandfather, who was the Jewish man. So she's Episcopalian, and he was Jewish. So yeah, we've got a little bit of that going on in our family.
Wow, that's awesome.
But I really loved hearing that about Howard Hessman, and I actually got to meet him at Dragon Con one year here in Atlanta. So, and he was really nice and gracious. So that was a thrill, because again, like I said, one of my favorite shows. So, now going back to your dad a little bit, how did he feel about you following in his footsteps with acting?
He wanted it. I mean, both my parents knew this is what I was going to do. I grew up in an entertainment family. There weren't doctors and lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was in show business except for my aunt, who became a diamond jeweler. Like, that was it. So entertainment is really all I knew, and I definitely don't think my dad wanted me to go into the other family business, which was owning a brothel and prostitution. So I really think acting was the better choice. You know, so I think he was like, yeah, go into acting, that's safe.
anything other than that.
You'll be great over there. Yeah, don't do it to your great-grandma. No, don't do it to your great-grandma. You know?
Ray, when you're thinking, and just speaking off of your dad, is there anything that when you were younger and he said it to you and you just were like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard, and then maybe 20, 30 years later, you were just like, wow, that makes a ton of sense. Have you ever had those moments in your life, recently,
you know,
in the last decade?
I would just say the fact that he was like, just be honest. He goes, they're going to shoot you anyway, so just be honest.
I mean, he's just that cut and dry.
Yeah, because that's how he was. You know, he was one of those two. He was so freaking moody. No, one day he would say he loved his kids. Like, 3 months later, you would hear, like, oh, I can't stand them kids, you know? Then, like, 2 months later, he'd be like, I love them. I can't believe I ever had such amazing children, you know? And you're like, whatever, because he spoke his truth at the moment.
So he really did live in the moment.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, because the truth is, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So you might as well just do.
There's such a lack
of
fear in that. There's such a complete distance of fear in that statement.
I think it's both. You know, like, again, here comes the psychologist to me, right?
Go ahead. Break it down.
This is so fearless aspect that we look at on the outside and go, oh, he was, and then there's the, well, they're going to probably bail anyway. So let me at least put it out there for them to at least have the excuse to bail, but at least it's out there, if that makes sense. So there's fear, and there's still no fear.
It the way you put that, it does make a lot of sense, because it almost you made it sound like it was a release, and just like, look, it's out there now. I'm not holding it in. I'm not you know, keeping it from people. It's just there. You again. It kind of goes back to the empowering thing. You do with it what you choose, and. It seemed like so many people were afraid of your dad, maybe, and all that they were afraid
of.
Was,
I mean, look, the man
themselves.
Was Mike. The man was on the FBI list. Of course,
sir.
I'm surprised. I'm sure I have an FBI file just for the fact that I was part of his sperm. you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were like, uh-oh, there's another prior in the world. Oh, there's six of them. We all have our own little file.
They're Jewish and black. Look out.
Yeah, look out. Ooh, that's in trouble. I hope she's not running for office anytime soon, you know? That'll really
fingers
screw
crossed
up America. Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I get with laughing so much. Sometimes I just get off topic. I don't know where we're going, but I appreciate the levity that you bring. I mean, I was telling people, and I've seen some of your work, and there are very few people in this world that put themselves into everything that they do, and you really. You generate a source of energy that just, whether it was head of the class or whether it's fried chicken and latkes or whether it's you on stage or you giving a speech or even the psychologist came out in that small clip that you had on the website for the play. You know, how do you generate this energy to keep, you know, progressing and keep growing as an artist after all of these years?
I don't know. I mean, that's the truth. I don't know. I just, that's where I go. I just think that's in me.
That's just who you are.
Yeah. At that point, I just have to say, I think that's just who I am, and it's always kind of how I've been. I don't know any other way.
Wow, so you know yourself. You totally know yourself.
Moments, you know, I wonder, like, what the heck? You know, but yeah, I do know my, you know, I do. You know, maybe too, because now I'm a mom, I know myself more because I see her. I see my daughter in my eyes. Do you know what I mean? And I mean, me and her eyes, and it's a trip.
What's that?
You know?
Now, what's, do you ever go back to, like, do you ever see your, do you ever, like, become your dad in those situations? Or just, like, are you thankful that, like, okay, maybe I've got a different environment that I wasn't raised in that I can at least help her with? What's that experience?
Well, the environment is different. I mean, look, there are no prostitutes. There's no drugs around my little girl.
I believe
you. So, you know, she has two parents, although we're not, you know, married and together, but she has two parents who definitely, you know, still care about each other enough to care for her. And so that's what it's, you know, it's a different, she's growing up in a completely different way and also in a different social time, you know, on top of it.
What do you think the differences are, maybe? You can compare, you know, the 60s and 70s, there's differences, but maybe there are more similarities than we're looking at. I don't know. Do you, because I look at race and then I see, you know, kind of the situation with heterosexual, homosexual, and those
right.
sorts of arguments, and it really does, I don't know, I just, it seems that even with the play, there's a lot of perspective to be gained from your experiences and those of the people around you.
You know, I'll tell you, I don't know what the heck I'm doing being a mother. It's day to day. The script flips. Once I think I got it, it's something new pops up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like today, out of the clear blue, she goes, you know, she's asking me again. If she said, Mommy, she goes, if my body is your body, is my body also Daddy's body? And I said, yes. And she goes, well, then how did I get this body? You know, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, you know, Mommy and Daddy, like, made you. There's this stuff, it's called DNA. And she's like, yeah, but she goes, when I was in your stomach, like, how did I get there? And I said, when you're older, Lotus. She goes, why is everything when I'm older?
She got metaphysical on you. That's crazy.
She told
wow.
right? And I was like, wow. Exactly. And I'm like, you're five. Shut up.
Wow.
Go back
she's
to being
only
five.
Five?
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
just
go
wait
back
till she gets older.
Right, exactly. I swear, chastity belts are making a comeback. I just want to tell the parents that.
Oh, my goodness. You definitely have a great talent in all areas and are so much fun. We could go on for hours, but I know we got to start wrapping up.
I know. I got things to do.
Be that time. But I did want to make sure to point out to everybody, you can follow Rain at Rain Pryor, and you can follow her, the fried chicken and latkes. It's at Fried Chicken L, and then on Twitter, both on Twitter. And you can like the Facebook page for her fried chicken and latkes. If you just type fried chicken and latkes, comma, it'll come up, and you'll be able to like her page. I've liked the page, and I have followed both of you guys, both you and your fried chicken and latkes. And I actually got a follow back. That was surprising, the fried chicken and latkes. That was wonderful. and I wish you so much wonderful success with everything.
Thank
you. And I would love for you to come to Atlanta with your show, if that ever could happen. I wanted to point out to you, we actually have a pretty large Jewish community here in Atlanta, and there is a Jewish film festival every
Southern Jewry. Fried chicken and latkes, perfect. You could have a little smorgasbord.
Yes. So, I mean,
catfish,
through... With,
what is it? Catfish and what's the other? Gefilte fish.
Yeah, I can't eat that stuff. That's one thing I don't like.
That's delicious.
Latkes, yes. Bagels and cream cheese and even lox I can do. But
right, yeah. Right. With the gefilte fish, yeah, it's a little. Yeah.
But if I could ever, I actually will, I can always tweet you or send you something on Facebook if you want to know, have more information, because of the festival, because it's definitely a big thing here every, I guess, winter.
Right.
So that would be fantastic if you could come to that. That would be wonderful.
Thank you. Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Here's
Rain. Thank you for being
here. Before you go, this is Pam. I'm behind the curtains over here, and we have a caller that would like to say hello to you. Do you have a minute to say hello?
Yay. Of course.
Okay, thank you. Paulette, you're live. Go ahead.
Hello, Rain. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Virginia.
Oh, my goodness.
Virginia.
Not too far?
Virginia Beach, Virginia, to be exact.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I done seen a little something about it on the website here. You got something about some fried chicken. I like fried chicken, but I don't know how to cook it too good, so I usually got to go out and buy it already done.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just give you my fried chicken recipe.
Yeah, but I still got to turn it and flip it.
You can't buy this. That's all I'm saying, people.
Yeah, well, could you already make it up for me and send it to me in the mail?
Send it to you in the mail. Well, thank you for calling in.
All right, hon. Keep up the good work here.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
All right. All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right.
That's
so
the sweetest thing. You can't buy that.
No.
Right there. You can't buy that.
My dad actually made fried chicken tonight, believe it or not. He actually did.
Right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to eat it in about a half hour. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do that on purpose?
No, I didn't. I came over to help him out, and he was just like, hey, I've got dinner cooking. And I was like, I'm going to borrow your landline. And he was like, great. And he said, I got fried chicken. And I was like, that's ironic, because I'm interviewing Rain Pryor about this whole thing with fried chicken and latkes. And my mom's Jewish, and she got me to pronounce latkes the correct way before I got on air with you and embarrassed myself completely. So thanks.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you again, Rain, for joining us. You were fantastic.
Have a great evening.
You too.
Thank you, Rain.
All right. Bye, you guys.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, wow. Wow, that was amazing. Wasn't
she
fantastic?
Yeah, she has great energy, and it's... It's cool because I think a lot of people in her position that have a father who is, I mean, Richard Pryor is one of the greatest comedians that have ever existed. I mean, just if there's people out there that don't know who he is, I don't know where you've been for the last 50 years, but 40 or 30 years. But you know, she isn't. She she isn't encumbered by that, or it doesn't hurt her or anything like that. And it's really a catalyst, and it's so cool that she's comfortable with talking about it. And I mean, it brings them up. And for somebody to be as comfortable with their honesty and how they want to portray a story, it's really genuine. And she came through in such an authentic way. So it was a blast. And I really appreciate Pam and Sabina for having me on and allowing me to interact with Rain. It's a real pleasure, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, same here. I mean, she is very genuine, down to earth, and so easy to talk to, and fun, and funny. I could go on and on all night.
honestly, it's what's great about this format and this show, and I don't have to say that because I'm on it, but we've talked to at least in the last month that I've been able to do this, we've talked to so many really cool guests that have just been able to share awesome stories and honest stories. And I know FCC and all the different regulations that exist with some of these other programs, terrestrial programs or whatever, you're not able to get that honesty out of them. And it's really fantastic just to kind of be able to explore whatever we want to, and these guests seem to be really interested in it. So it's a very cool exchange. And to get the type of guests to come on Take Two, I think, is amazing. So thank you, Pam, and all of the people that are working hard on the show. You guys do an awesome job.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome, Michael and Sabina, and thank you guys for doing the show for me tonight. I really appreciate it. Hopefully by Friday when my next interview comes up on my music show, I'll have a better voice.
Well, you definitely sound better than I did before, trust me, when I did that show with Rain.
I know I sound better than when I originally talked to you the other day, too, but my voice goes in and out. But thank you both for doing the interview. It was nice listening to it for a change.
Well, hopefully we did you proud, Pam. We're happy
you,
to carry on
did.
For our fearless leader.
So. You definitely did. You did. Thank you again, both of you. And for our listeners, thank you for joining us. And please follow the show on Twitter at Take2Radio. Sabina could be followed under my co-host show, which would be Take2Radio Crew. Follow Michael at Rising Terra, and that's Terra. Also, follow us on Blog Talk. I'll send you an email each and every time we have a show scheduled so you don't miss out on anybody you want to listen to. Check out the website at take2radio.com. You can also listen to the previous podcast for free on iTunes and on Stitcher. Stitcher is a mobile app you can download to any of your mobile devices. And with that, I'm going to say good night, everybody, and enjoy your evening. Michael, send me chicken. I'm starving. And thanks again.
If I don't eat it all, it's yours.
Thanks. And I only like the white meat, so you'll have to save that for me.
We got plenty.
All right. Take care, everybody. Good night.
Thanks,
and God bless. All right. Bye-bye.